Do you have money or math anxiety, which we define as experiencing a sense of fear, angst, or dread when even talking about numbers or math? 68% say yes. Okay, 68% say yes. The problem is what's really interesting is we also survey professionals that are already out in the workforce. It goes to, last I checked, 69% say yes. So there's virtually no change right now until we intervene. And that's why the schools program is so important with financial literacy to say, okay, when you're in school, let's help you understand that. So when you get out into the workforce, you're not avoiding numbers and you're not avoiding the most important topic to make sure you're successful at your craft.
You're listening to the Beauty Business Game Changer Podcast, a podcast for beauty industry providers and business owners that are wanting to level up their game to create a profitable career and rewarding lifestyle. I'm Jennifer Alvarez, salon owner, educator, serving 20 years as a licensed cosmetologist, and I'm here to make an impact in your life and career. As creative entrepreneurs, we need education that empowers us and raises the standards. My mission is to give sound business advice and share inspiring stories that help you reach your goals and to dream bigger. Welcome to your Beauty Business Game Changer.
Welcome back to the Beauty Business Game Changer Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Alvarez. Today, I'm so excited to bring on this guest. I have seen her on stage speak, and she has a wealth of knowledge. She serves as president and partner for Cunity and Cunity for Schools, the market leader for financial literacy and financial wellness, learning and development in the professional beauty industry. Since joining Cunity, she's brought Cunity's uniquely simple and visual approach to companies from beauty to finance. Erin's passion is in helping businesses, professionals, and students reach another level of financial wellness, all through Cunity's signature, simple, visual, amazing, and actionable, approachable steps to success. Erin, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be with you, Jen. And it was so great to have you live and in color at Money SBO. I think, what was that, like 2 weeks ago or something like that? 2 weeks ago, I can't even remember. And also, you were just on my podcast last week. So it's a nice like double week with you. I'm so excited to be back with you.
I love it, Erin. And you're just a wealth of knowledge. And I've seen you speak, and all the information that you're sharing, I need everyone listening to this podcast to follow you and get to know you and everything you stand for, because what your company is doing is the game changer of this industry. And it's funny that it is a little bit newer to myself of learning this. And I will tell you that the moment that I started to learn about what Cunity is all about, I'm hooked. I am hooked. So if you can start with sharing with our listeners what Cunity is all about and how it started.
Absolutely. So Cunity, really what we're about, as you mentioned, is we at our core are a learning and development company. I mean, and a learning and development company, you know, you could also consider us an education company, but we believe that education really is the key, right? You can't change something if you don't have the knowledge to change it, but education alone isn't enough to create change, right? We are in a world right now where we're in the age of access to free information, right? You can access education about literally any topic you want. You can go on YouTube and you can get it for free. Yet we haven't seen the results or changes that we want. So we know that it's not just about education. And so I think kind of the companion to what Cunity does with learning and development, particularly around the financial area for beauty and wellness businesses, is we also combine it with simple and visual tools. And we really believe that the simple and visual tools allow us kind of a palette to actually take that education and go from knowing to doing, right? Knowing is not enough. It's knowing plus doing is really what creates change. And so it's really a unique blend of simple visual education plus simple visual and actionable tools. And so we kind of have three divisions within Cunity Enterprises, so to speak. So we have Cunity SBO, which is really SBO just stands for Small Business Owners and Leaders. And so that's what you participated in, right? That was our Money SBO course. And we have other courses and programming in that body, in that arm of Qunity. And it's really tools and resources that are going to help small business owners and leaders build more successful, profitable, higher sales, and ultimately sustainable businesses. So largely our customers in the Qunity SBO are salons, spas, and med spas. Those are kind of the trifecta of businesses that we typically work with. Of course, we can serve barbers. We can serve really anyone in the beauty and wellness sector. So that's Qunity SBO. And then the one that I'm passionate about all of them, but one that I've always been very passionate about is Qunity for Schools. And so Qunity for Schools, we launched, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I have no concept of time anymore. We launched it in September of 2021, however long ago that was, not even 2 years ago yet. And we are in about 100 and sorry, that's, my emails is flooding in. I should have turned those notifications off. And we launched that, in September of 2021, and we're in about 130 schools right now. And they're all beauty and wellness campuses that have brought in a very simple and visual financial literacy curriculum. So it's about a 40-hour curriculum that really takes the most important money-related topics for students pursuing a career in beauty and wellness to learn before they actually enter the workforce. So they understand and build a basic profit and loss statement. They understand the different types of employment options in the beauty industry. They understand the importance of how to drive sales. And so it's really, really powerful. And that's something we're super passionate about is, we love working with owners and leaders, but in order to create more sustainable and a more successful industry, we have to start with students and we have to start with the way we're educating them. And so I believe that has the capability to really change the trajectory of a student's life, but also what the next generation of beauty and wellness professionals look like. And then most recently, we also have the Qunity Institute. And the Qunity Institute, and really, as we get into more of our story, all of our divisions and all of our products have really been created very organically and purely to solve a need. And the Qunity Institute really was designed to fill a critical gap in the beauty and wellness sector, which is a lack of quality data in the beauty industry, particularly data around earnings and compensation for hairdressers. And what's also kind of put together in that is a low level of financial literacy. So that institute serves as really a third-party firm to provide high-quality research and data and financial literacy to really elevate both the perception and reality of what it means for someone to have a career in beauty and wellness. So within that institute, we just published our first study that has since been presented to the U.S. Department of Education. As I told you, I was just in D.C. We were presenting it to the U.S. Senate's office. We've done numerous presentations around those findings that really show very compelling data that is very different than what you see on the U.S. Department of Labor Statistics or the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, as well as other sources that, really don't have the best perception of our industry. And it's really on us to, as an industry, provide data, which we have not historically done a great job of. And so those are kind of the three areas of Qunity. We have programs, we have events, we have consulting opportunities, we have tools. I have a podcast called Money O2, which your episode is on, where you share your money story. So we do a lot of things and our goal is really just to service the industry.
I love it. I mean, there's so many reasons why this is beneficial to our industry for not just the salon owner, but from the student level. Mm-hmm. And would you say that hairdressers behind the chair can gain value from?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we work with, so I think I've shared with you, and this isn't unique to us, but we have broken up in the way we educate around different employment options as preneurship. So there's, of course, entrepreneurs, which we define as a business owner with a staff, i.e. with employees. So you would be considered an entrepreneur. Then there is solopreneurs, those who are a business of one. And then those are those hairdressers working in an existing business. And I say hairdressers, but I also mean estheticians, massage therapists, whatever service you provide. And then there's what's called intrapreneurs. So entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and intrapreneurs. And intrapreneurs are really those who have a business within the structure of an existing business without any financial risk, like a solopreneur who is a really a business of one. That's how we define it. And then an entrepreneur who has, you know, ultimately the employees under them. We really service right now, really the whole industry, but kind of our specialty is entrepreneurs as well as intrapreneurs. So those who are working within existing businesses, as well as the business owners and leaders. We believe and will plan to support solopreneurs as well. But that's really our sweet spot right now.
And I think that's amazing that you were able to define that role within the business of an entrepreneur.
Intrapreneur.
Mm-hmm. Intrapreneur.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's my team.
And yeah, that's your team.
It's so important for me, at least as their leader, that I empower them that if you put the effort in, if you have the tools in place, that you can develop a beautiful business behind the chair. And
absolutely.
It doesn't mean, you know, a lot of people I think that the next step to success in their career is to be a business owner, mm-hmm. and to open up a salon. And that's just not the pathway for everyone.
No, it's not. And there's a lot of people, by the way, there are certain people that is a good path for them. And that is what they really want. And they enter into being a business of one, a solopreneur, for the right reasons and with the facts. Unfortunately, we have seen people do it without the facts and based on misinformation and really going into it, maybe with not the right expectations. But I am sure you as an entrepreneur have wished you were an intrapreneur sometimes, because it's really hard to be an entrepreneur at times, really hard. And being an intrapreneur, there's so much merit and there's so much financial responsibility or financial possibility, because you can control, you know, in so many ways. And yes, as a solopreneur, you can grow your income, but there is a ceiling, right? You're a business of one. You don't have the staff and the support and the infrastructure and the marketing that you have within an existing business. And so I think sometimes in this industry, the allure and the glamour of that has gotten lost, but that is glamorous. It's actually really cool that you can build a business within an existing business, especially if you're working under a great leader like yourself, who I know there's so many leaders that we work with that pour into their team. I mean, they thrive when their team makes more money. And you don't have that when you're solo. And so I think it's just such a valuable place. And I really want professionals, as they think about where is the best place of employment for them, to not discount the value and possibility of what it means to be an entrepreneur, because you can make a lot of money. There is, I tell a story, I think you may or may not have seen this, but I tell a story of Adam. His real name is not Adam, but he is a real hairdresser. And this was really the impetus for us taking on the compensation study to really dispel some of these myths. And he works for a salon and he came to us and we had a relationship with that salon, and he's the director of education as well. And it's a small business, you know, in many cases, salons are considered micro businesses, not even small businesses. And he was struggling and he thought that struggle was because he wasn't making enough money. And so we talked to him, we said, well, Adam, how much money are you making? And he couldn't even tell us. He was an entrepreneur at the time. And he was thinking about either going solo, started to think that he wasn't making enough money and was considering going solo or leaving the industry altogether because he was having financial struggles. When we did the math with him, any guesses of how much money he was making?
Any guess that of what he was making?
Yeah.
I mean, this wouldn't be fair because
I know. Oh, you've seen it. I'm like, I can't even remember what I say anymore when I'm out and who I tell what. It was $147,000 a year. Okay. Yeah. That is a lot of money. That's more than a lot of people are making. And that's with no money out responsibilities as, you know, business owners or solopreneurs has. Yes, of course, he has money out responsibilities in his personal life, but not from a business component other than taxes, of course. And so it's just those stories we hear all the time. There's another person that I am having on my podcast soon. She's been an entrepreneur for 20 years. She's made well over $3 million as an intrapreneur and loves it. And I really, you know, there's just so many possibilities already. And she's still going and she loves it. And she leaves at the end of the day, gets to go home, spend time with her family. So there's just a lot of merit to it. And I think we should have more of a conversation, but I'll pause for a second.
It's interesting, you know, with Adam's story, mm-hmm. and I believe a lot of people who hear that story and they hear, did you say 147,000?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be very happy with that. And
oh God, yeah.
It could, you know, what could $147,000 do for you? How could that change your life?
A year. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the fact that it came from, well, I feel like I'm not making enough.
Yeah.
And how can we change that dialogue of, all right, what are some of the things that we need to look at in order so that we know we are being profitable or we are making good money?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think, you know, number one is, you know, what Adam's story illustrates is really two problems. Number one is a lack of access to quality data, which is why we're putting on studies like the one I mentioned. And then number two, which is really illustrated by his story, was a lack of financial literacy. And number one, when we educated Adam, he now realizes he's in the top 8% of all earners in the United States, okay, as a hairdresser. That's pretty compelling. And that data kind of helps reframe and say, wow, I'm in the top 8%. Now, if you look at the data that's out there on earnings for hairdressers, that's kind of a deeper rabbit hole, because if you go online, you're going to find, you know, under $30,000 a year, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. We maintain that that's not the whole picture. And so we did our study and looked at, which again, it's starting the process because it doesn't address the whole industry, but we looked at kind of one sector of the pie, which is for W-2 hairdressers or cosmetologists working as an employee in a salon with between 1 to 10 locations. So that's kind of one sector of the pie. And we analyzed the W-2 earnings of people like Adam. So Adam would have fell into that category. And we found an average annual earning of just over $54,000 a year. So Adam could also look at that and say, okay, you know, I'm almost triple that. And I'm in a really different, you know, I'm doing pretty well. He's also been in the industry for 20 years. So, and really recognizing number one with that data, which I'm sure we'll get into, that 54,000 was for somebody working on average 27.8 hours a week. So if we were to annualize those earnings and said, okay, let's factor it to what is considered the normal standard work week, which is 40 hours a week, that would take it up to just under $80,000 a year on average. That is not bad. That is not a bad income at all, especially compared to many other industries that are also being faced with layoffs, and AI can, you know, potentially, you know, take over or create job insecurity. And so there's a lot of merits to it. And I think secondly is really, you know, I would say there's financial literacy is not just a problem unique to our industry. I think COVID has really magnified the need to really learn about financial literacy, but it's something we've been doing at Cunity for years. And it's really why we got started. It was why, so Tom, my business partner and our founder, he's also my father. So we're family owned and operated business. He was a former CPA. So he was a former accountant and also held various different positions within the industry. He started at a financial firm and then moved into a role as a CFO, worked in distribution, was the CEO of a large product company, the North America division, for a short period of time. And then became a multi-location salon owner as well. Actually, that order was flipped. It was salon owner before. So he's served in various different roles. And so he was co-owner of an 8-location salon group with about 400 employees. And it was really when he moved from finance into salon ownership that he really had his own version of culture shock, right? So moving from finance, working with a bunch of, you know, you could say, if you believe there's a brain, left brain individuals, accountants, lots of spreadsheets, lots of numbers. That was his language. And then he moved into ownership, which was working with predominantly females, artists, creatives, visual, emotional, intuitive learners, and just really saw the lack of financial literacy and how people would maybe not understand how much money they were making or not realize that they could control their income. And so he really recognized that there was a huge level of money and math anxiety. So when he'd sit down with people and show numbers, people would shut down. But if he could backtrack and explain it in pictures and visuals and in a much more creative, intuitive way, then the light bulbs would click. So he realized that the way numbers and math and finance was being communicated to salon and spa professionals was like me speaking Mandarin to you over and over again. When you keep telling me I don't, and your body language shows that you don't understand and I don't speak Mandarin. And it was like, okay, let's try a different way. And so after being in that position for about 6 years, he sold his shares and then moved on and created Qunity, which was solely dedicated to really teaching money and finance in a visual, fun, emotional, intuitive way. Because we also do surveys. We do this at all of our programs that says, do you have money or math anxiety? And when we ask students this, we've had now, I think formally, we've asked it in numerous surveys. We have, I think, almost 5,000 respondents, and the number always stays the same. Do you have money or math anxiety, which we define as experiencing a sense of fear, angst, or dread when even talking about numbers or math? 68% say yes. Okay, 68% say yes. The problem is what's really interesting is we also survey professionals that are already out in the workforce. It goes to, last I checked, 69% say yes. So there's virtually no change right now until we intervene. And that's why the schools program is so important with financial literacy, to say, okay, when you're in school, let's help you understand that. So when you get out into the workforce, you're not avoiding numbers, or you're not avoiding the most important topic to make sure you're successful at your craft. So
I definitely appreciate, as a visual person, and in the podcast that we spoke with together, both you and I in high school had some issues with
homework
and classes. And I definitely would say that I studied so hard to do well in math, but it definitely gave me anxiety. And so when I found Qunity and the tools that you have, you're right. A light bulb goes off where that number means something different. And you start to visualize your business and your spending habits differently. And I think that's where that change starts to happen.
Yeah. And
I definitely appreciate that. I'm curious to know what it was like growing up in a house with the CPA and multi-location owner family.
Oh my God. I loved it. When he was leaving, I think I was 16. I loved going into the salons. First of all, I got hooked up a lot. We would always do parties and walk in, and everyone was so nice. And it was so much fun. I think I told you, I used to fold towels in the back room with the staff. That was like when I was 13, my job, I would fold the towels. I would clean out the color. I would throw stuff away. For Christmas parties, I'd always pack like the little gift boxes. I loved it. I mean, it was really, I remember I went to horse camp with a bunch of girlfriends, and we all went into the salons. We all got our hair braided in big old cornrows before we went to horse camp. You know, like, it was always like, I have so many fond memories of that. And I think the biggest memory that I think I always, you know, when I think back, because I wanted to be a reporter. I did not think I would be in beauty, or I'm not the best personally at like hair and makeup. It's just not my thing. That's why I go to professionals. But I remember, I had to have been like 11 or 12 or something like that. And my hair, it's straight right now. I don't know if people are in videos, but my hair is very curly. And I was always so self-conscious about it because I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, it was really long and frizzy and curly. And I remember for Christmas, I got tickets to it was either NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. I went to both. So I can't remember. No, it was Backstreet Boys this time. So I got a new dress. I remember it was orange with a flower on it. And my dad took me, and it was just me and my dad. It was my present to go to this Backstreet Boys concert. I remember the dress, and I went to get my hair done, and they blew it out and straightened it for me. And then I got my makeup done. And I swear to God, I looked in the mirror as a 12-year-old, and I was like, and I told my dad, I said, Dad, I'm going to get pulled on stage because Nick Carter is going to, because I thought I looked so beautiful with my hair straight that Nick Carter would notice me from the stage and pull me. Like, I felt that beautiful. I kid you not, because I'd never seen my hair that straight. And my dad always tells the story and he's like, I had no heart to tell you that we were literally in the nosebleed section. Like, there's no way he could see you, you know, like it wasn't like it was front row tickets or anything. And I just like that memory of really feeling so beautiful and like what somebody could do, you know, with their hands. It was like, I really respect it. And, you know, it's never going to go away. And, you know, those moments, that feeling of beauty, it's not that I never felt beautiful. I don't want to say that, but I think that was the first time where I was like, wow, I feel really beautiful. And that was done in a salon. And I just think there's so much magic to that for a little girl and that memory. I mean, that's a lifelong memory that I have with my dad and with being in the salon. And people do that every single day. And it's just like, that should be celebrated, you know?
It sounds like you had a really great positive impact being in that environment.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious to know, how did your life segue into you becoming president then of company about math and tools?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think, first of all, I also want to illustrate, I was very good at math in my early days. And then I think you and I talked about that. For some reason in high school, I think I went to a school where there was a lot of very intelligent people. And I was great at English and the other stuff, but math started to become much more challenging to me. And I don't really know why that was. And I started to have fear around it. And I did okay. You know, I did okay in it, but I worked really, really hard to do okay in it. And same with you. When I was in college, I avoided taking math classes like the plague. I mean, I waited until my junior and senior year to get them done, and I hated it. And so even me, I mean, you're a business owner, I'm president of a company, I have to deal with numbers, but I don't have to be the expert on it. And I don't have to fear, but I do have to understand them. And so like math is not my favorite subject here either. But what math and what numbers can provide and money is necessary. And it's a critical tool. And I think how I got into Qunity was really totally by accident. And when I was a junior in college, I was supposed to have an internship at a marketing firm, and midway in, so I went to University of Minnesota, and then I actually ended up finishing at Loyola. And when I was doing my internship, I think it was either before my junior year or senior year. I actually can't even remember, one of the two. No, it was before my senior year. Sorry. And they called me, and they when we were in the office, and they said, we've been acquired and we're going to be moving our headquarters to Denton, Texas, which I was in Minnesota. Like, I wasn't going to move to Denton, Texas for a 3-month internship, right? I wasn't my full place of employment. And so I was very focused on my resume at that time. And so I remember my dad, Tom, had just started Qunity at the time. And so I called him and I said, what am I going to do? Like, I was depending on this internship. I can't move to Texas. Like, school starts in a month and a half. What should I do? And I was very proud of being financially independent at that time. Like, I always worked through summers. And he's like, I know, you can come work for me. And I was like, I don't even know what you do anymore since you left the salons. I'm like, I don't know what you are doing. You have this office downtown and you do something in for salons and spas, but I have no idea what it is. And
I can just picture him too, like grinning ear to ear.
Yeah.
Like, this is it, Aaron.
Yeah. And so he was like, I was like, no, I mean, I just like, there's gotta be other options. And he was like, well, I'll match your pay. I was like, all right, well, I don't really have it. Like, no one was going to hire me with a month and a half notice before I went to be a student. So I did. And that was, I think, in 2012. And now it's 2023, and I've really grown with the company. I did leave for a year to really make sure before I came on as a partner that it was what I wanted to do. But I remember I had to have been 21 or 22 when I started doing these programs with him. And he'd bring in, and it was very early days of Qunity. And so a lot of what that was live seminars, really. And there was a woman in the classroom, and she had 3 salons. I think she had 80 employees. and she burst out crying in one of the workshops. And it was when we presented numbers, it was what's called the measure module, which you learned a little bit about, was the two number growth and the number side of things. And she literally, I will never forget it. She slammed down her workbook. We had like a visual workbook that really presented everything visually. And she said, "Why the hell did nobody tell me it could be this simple?" She goes, like she was in her 60s and she'd been operating with a fear and not understanding that this could be simple because it had always felt so complicated to her. And she's like, she was actually mad that she had just learned this, you know, in, you know, I don't know how many years she was in business, but she was 60 years old. And I remember when I was watching numbers being taught, I'm like, wow, like, why didn't I learn about finance like this in college, where it was more related to me? And, you know, I wasn't going to go be an accountant. I didn't need, you know, the traditional way of learning, but I needed to understand it. And so I really felt like everybody needs to know this information, not just people in this industry, everybody needs to know this information. And so, we grew, we evolved, we, continue to evolve. And I just really feel like there's so much opportunity in this industry. And I do think it's an underserved industry. And even in my circles, people are like, "What do? You work with salons and spas." And it's like, there's this automatic perception around it. And it's like, we can change that. This is legitimate business, but we all have to change that. And so I think it goes through education. It goes through data. It goes through financial literacy, which is really everything we seek to do. And I've just seen so many businesses and individuals transform through a little bit of education. And I guess I'm biased. I mean, I really do believe that education can change hearts and minds and also financial realities. So
it's so incredible what you are bringing to the table to create that financial literacy and to break it down into simplest form. When it does come to math, it is adding, subtracting, mm-hmm. at percentages, maybe some multiplication, but yeah. it is the minimum, you know, mm-hmm. so we don't have to fear about doing algebra, geometry, or
no
other math classes I never took.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really, you know, going to SBO for my first mm-hmm. time and being in this intimate setting group, it was transformative. Mm-hmm. Being there and talking to people who have been in the industry for many, many years as multiple location salon owners to smaller businesses like myself with 8 employees. And it was really cool to create that community together. Mm-hmm. And I already started to implement the tools and it has empowered me to transform my business. And I'm super excited to learn more about Qnity. I'd love to know, there's something coming up that I want my listeners to know mm-hmm. about, and I'm going to put this in the show notes, mm-hmm. but the fill.
Oh, yes.
Wait.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited that you're coming. So the fill, we used to do what was called, we called them ambassador retreats back in the day. So for any OG Qnity people, that's what it used to be called. And we also had something called, or we have something called the 2-10 project, which was kind of our annual event. And the problem with the 2-10 project was that is capped at 50 companies and you have to have between 2 to 10 locations to attend that. And Tom really created that when he was, you know, out of his need as when he was an owner of that 8 location group to really have a community to really talk about those unique issues. And the problem was that left behind a huge sector of people that, you know, either didn't have that many locations or, you know, beyond the 50 company cap, they couldn't come. And so we really decided last year, we were going to get back to doing an annual event for anyone. And you don't have to be a Qnity client to attend. You don't even have to be familiar with Qnity. We're doing a Qnity immersion session for people who have never heard of us. So when you get to the event, you'll be put on that track. So if it's your first time there, but it is such an amazing community. And really the intention was filling the gaps in your business. That's the component, giving you tools, education, tools and education really, and also information to be able to leave and fill critical gaps in your business. And really there's kind of 5 core gaps that conference focuses on. The first two are really financially based. Number one is driving sales growth. So that's driving top line revenue, money in, right? How can you drive sales through service and through retail and other opportunities? I know many businesses are struggling with that. And that's, you know, it's constantly, there's ways to innovate and there's systems and tools to do that. So number one is driving sales growth. Number two is increasing profitability. As you know, through attending Money SBO, which that focuses both on sales, but mostly profitability, salons, beauty and wellness businesses are lower margin businesses historically, right? They're small businesses. It's a combination of service and retail. And so protecting and driving profitability is hugely important. And so we'll be talking about that and giving some tools for that as well. Then the third one, which is really, really, I think where the rubber, bless you, where the rubber meets the road for many is execution. Again, it's the knowing to doing element. We see so many people and so many other industry events and workshops get people super jazzed and super inspired and excited. And I think there is an importance around that, you know, getting people inspired and motivated, but then too often people leave and just don't do anything and they go back to their ways. And so execution is really about giving tools and structures so you can apply this in your business to go from knowing to doing. So you have repeatable systems that you can loop and bring in other members of your team to the table with. So growth, profitability, execution. The next one is leadership development. So really everyone at this conference is required to be a leader. So you must be a owner, manager, or in a leadership role. We are opening it to some schools as well. So we have some schools that are going and it's all owners, leaders, or directors attending that as well. And then lastly is engagement. So that's really around staff engagement. So really finding new ways, you know, we constantly hear retaining staff, attracting staff, all of those things. And really what we're doing is we're bringing our systems and tools, but another big element is networking with others. And most of these businesses, I mean, almost all of the businesses, all of these businesses are very invested in what's new and they challenge themselves. These are not complacent business owners. They come every year. They're doing a lot of things right. I mean, we have one with 15 locations coming. I'm looking at our attendee list, one with 8 locations, one with 7, one with 5. I mean, these are big businesses and small businesses. We have one I'm looking at, I think they've got 5 chairs, you know, a smaller business. And so it's a great way for owners to connect with people of various different sizes and take away what works with them and apply it to their own business. And then on the Sunday night before that event, we have a really, really fun celebration, which is a fundraiser for an organization called Beauty Changes Lives, which is a nonprofit that seeks to make beauty and wellness a first choice career. So they do tons of amazing work like scholarships and things like that. So we donate the proceeds of that event to that organization, but we also have what's called an impact award ceremony. And so that award ceremony is really for people using the Qunity system. That's kind of our, but anyone is welcome to attend, but you have to be using the Qunity systems to apply. And we celebrate those for outstanding achievements in one of those 5 areas, those 5 gaps. And so we award and give physical awards to these business owners. And one of them, I'm actually going to see her next week. She is a med spa in California. When she met us, I think she was at, I might be butchering these numbers. I wish I could pull it up, but I think she was at just under $900,000 a year. She's now at 2.2 million and has bought 2 buildings. I mean, it's like, so she got awarded growth because she's continued for 2 years, been working with us, plugging it. She's the physician and she's also the owner of a med spa. And she was like, you know, she was a practitioner, she was a doctor. And so she really learned and applied these tools. And that's one of them. Another one who totally transformed their profitability. And there's just so many stories like that. And so not only are those businesses able to get awards for their hard work, they're also able to inspire people there to show what's possible. Because I know you believe this too, but I'm such a fan of before and after stories. I mean, like anytime you need to make a change, like get inspired with people that can serve as examples of what's possible, you know, and what's possible. Oh, that person did it. Okay, that's possible for me too. And so we award various different businesses so you can relate to someone and be like, okay, if I work at this, I can be here next year and or sooner than that and create those changes in my own business.
I am so excited for this. And there was a few things that you said that stood out to me as far as execution, because there is a lot of education, some good, some really great, and some maybe we could avoid. But needless to say, it's really important that we learn things and that we do take it back to our businesses to implement. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that Qunity sets you up for success to do that with your visual tools so that we're not just discussing numbers and the P&L and these benchmarks and you feel like, okay, that's the what, now how? How do I do this? And to truly break this down in simplest form that's very visually pleasing, that creative people now can enjoy the development of their business. I think that's amazing. And to be able to be a part of this group, to rub elbows with others who have gone before you, who are showing success and growth, it definitely paves a path for you as a small business owner or leader within your business of what is the possibility. I think that is just, I'm just so excited to be a part of this. I'm curious to know a little bit before we have to end this podcast, because I feel like I could talk to you all day, Erin.
I know, same.
I'm very curious. There's been a recent report, a study about the compensation study, and this has been a big topic, I would say, in the past 5 years, maybe 7 years, especially with solopreneurs. Do we do commission? Do we do booth rent? Do we do hybrid? And what should I be paying people? I think this is a really cool report, and I'd love to hear some data and statistics around that that could be really beneficial to our listeners.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times people come to us and say, what should I be paying people? And, you know, that's always, there's definitely a deeper dive and, you know, unique situation to your own business and your own metrics and things like that. But as far as what we did specifically for this report was really sought to answer a very simple question. What do earnings look like for someone who is a cosmetologist in pro beauty? And we're expanding that to include, you know, esthetician and massage therapist and all those things, because right now, really the only data that you can find is the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And the problem with the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics is it lumps in all types of career holders into one pie and then takes those earnings. But really what we really like to think of the pie as is, you know, and how we've started to break it down is, again, if you think of a pie as in three units. So you've got salons like yourself would fall under this, a business with between 1 to 10 locations and employees working in within that sector. Then you've got the next sector, which would be 11 locations plus. So a professional working at a business with 11 plus locations. So let's say Great Clips, Sport Clips, you know, for spa, massage, envy, et cetera. Then you have the solopreneur sector, right? And so it's very hard, you know, for someone who, let's say, is a career employee, they work 40 hours a week as an employee at a salon compared to someone who is maybe doing it for 3 hours a week out of their bathroom, right? They report their income differently, right? One is independent, one or maybe not reporting anything at all. And then one is a person making a career out of this. And it's all lumped together as the same. And that's very, very different. It's just not an apples to apples comparison. And so what we did was, and the reason why we took on this study first was to help, you know, Adam's story, as I shared with you, he was going to leave his employer of years. And we wanted to make sure that if he was going to do that, fine. You know, it's not like people can't leave the place they work, but have all the facts and don't make decisions without the facts. And so we wanted to be able to have a report where people like Adam, but mostly Adam's employer, could really be able to help educate them on some data. So people weren't leaving to go solo and potentially leaving the industry. due to incomplete information, right? And so as we started diving into that, we realized, and this has been a topic in leadership for quite some time within the industry, there's not a study that has looked at this. Third-party firms have actually turned down doing this study just due to the fear of getting around the whole tip issue, right? And I think largely the fear around that comes from the pie of the solopreneurs, because that is very, very challenging to collect data in a report in a meaningful way for that sector. And so when we looked at, oh, your dog's so cute. so cute. So as we started gearing into it, and many of our customers are also school owners, and school owners are constantly facing new legislative threats, and they're really impacted on those earnings because many of these schools rely on their students to be able to take government funding to go to school. Well, the government considers and looks at the income and says, okay, well, we're not going to fund poverty level wages, right? And so it really impacts these cosmetology schools because the government is looking at those numbers and it just doesn't tell the full picture. And so there's a recent report that came out by the Century Foundation that shows average earnings for a third year cosmetologist of $16,600 a year. Okay. So that came out. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says the average earnings are $17.30. And so we said, okay, let's try to take on as verifiable study as possible, which starts with that first sector of the pie I mentioned with salons with 1 to 10 locations and employees working within that. Because really, and why it matters is, these articles that I shared with you says it's a notoriously low paying field of employment, near poverty level wages in a low tier profession, earn low wages and work long hours with minimum time off. The New York Times said a $21,000 cosmetology school debt and a $9 an hour job, right? So there's kind of a perception and media related crisis. And so really, you know, why this matters too is number one is small businesses like yourself are really struggling. Some more than others are struggling to retain and find talent. Schools are being constantly faced with legislative threats. And ultimately an entire industry is at risk due to this lack of data. And so what we did was we said, again, let's try to make this as verifiable as possible. So we looked at and analyzed the W-2s for employees working in salons with between 1 to 10 locations. And so this report, it took us quite a bit of time to get done. And obviously getting people to participate in this is very challenging because in order to make it verifiable, it's not a survey, right? I can't just send out a survey and you type to me, subjectively what people are making. It's looking at the W-2 for all of your employees. And it's anonymous. Everything is anonymous. But we have to have a verifiable checks and balance to say, okay, yes, that's accurate. So we had 330 salon locations participate in this first round of what is called the Pro Beauty Compensation Study. And that was brought to you by the CUNY Institute. So that's where that study lives. We had 300, just under 3,400 employees participate, well, by way of their salon owners. And these businesses represented almost $200 million in payroll compensation. Okay, so that's a lot of money that's being paid out to people. And the goal of this study to make it as relevant as possible is obviously to get the sample size as high as possible. Like I would love that to be $1 billion in payroll compensation. We got a lot of ways, we got more participation needed in order to get there. But there was 4 different salon price points represented in that study. These salons were across 36 different states. Again, the next round, which we're gearing up for, I want it to be 50 states, right? These salons carried collectively 149 different product brands. So it wasn't like it was, strictly Aveda, strictly Paul Mitchell, or strictly Weller, Moroccan. It was a diversity of product brands as well. And they represented 4 different compensation structures. The commonality is that they were all W-2 businesses, right? Giving their service providers W-2s. And I really serve as the spokeswoman, but we have an amazing team. Tom really championed this, our CEO, and then we have we aligned with 2 PhDs to help with this, actually 3, and we outsourced the data collection to a CPA firm and really separated it from other CUNY enterprises, because once you get into research, it's like a whole different ballgame, and it's very expensive to do high quality research, right? We also had different sponsors that really stepped up. So we had product brands and others really help make sure that we could fund this study. And I think, you know, the key takeaways, and I want to give a disclaimer because, you know, I think one of the problems right now with this access to information is people just throw things out there like it's everything is facts and take it out of context. And really the reality is this is a fact, these numbers that I will share with you. However, it is considered market research. It is not the Bible. It is, we are continuing to evolve this study. So as we do it, which we're gearing up to do phase three, we just launched phase two. These numbers might change as we get up more participation, but these are the findings from the most recent study. And so it's intended to be as accurate as possible. And, you know, the findings are subject to evolve, but I shared with you the earnings. The average earnings for the hairdresser in that group was $54,307, but they were working 27.8 hours a week. So if we annualize that to 40 hours a week, it was $79,807 a year. Not a bad living, right? Not a bad living for minimal education compared to some other fields, right? Earnings, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics found $17.30. We found average hourly earnings of $38.37. So we found double. Okay.
Wow.
A big elephant in the room that many people might think of is, well, what about tips? Right. You know, that's everyone kind of like throws their hands up. Well, the reality is I'm sure, as you know, most businesses have a very high rate of tip compliance because they're using credit card processors. I probably should tip in cash, but I always do credit card. I never carry cash around. Right. So in the report, we go through a full breakdown of how we handled tips. But bottom line is if it was on the W-2, it was counted. Any cash tips were not counted. We looked at the W-2s or if they did not report them. However, we found almost 90% of these businesses reported a very high rate of tip compliance. And so sure, you could argue that those findings could even be slightly higher. However, you know, compared to like solopreneurship, these are pretty close to accurate, right? You know, making that assumption. So you could make the assumption that yes, maybe they could be increased a little bit. Next was flexibility. And I think this is something that is actually a huge bonus of this career, especially for a predominantly female workforce that, you know, should you choose to have children and be in child rearing years, this allows tremendous flexibility. So 27.8 average hours worked per week. 99% of these employers offered some or total flexibility in scheduling for their staff. Okay. That's compared to 54% of other industries offering flexibility. That's huge. And that needs to be communicated to many other careers. Another common narrative though, is that hairdressers don't get benefits or salons don't offer benefits. 96% of these employers offered benefits to their staff.
Wow.
93% contributed to these benefits, right? Another huge, and I think another thing to highlight with that is many of these businesses like yourselves are very small businesses. Businesses, benefits are expensive. And so it just demonstrates the level of care and what our small businesses that we're working with are really trying to do, which is do their best to really take care of their employees, even with lower margins compared to large corporations, right? Another element is training. There has been some criticism that there is, quote, no on-the-job training, which as you as a salon owner, you're like, that's just not true, right? And 90% of these businesses offered new hire training programs or ongoing education. Inclusion was another finding. 85% of these businesses in the study included at least one female owner, okay? 85% had a female owner of the business. That is huge. There was also a tremendous level of diversity around other ownership demographics. And so, you know, it was just so interesting. I mentioned to you, I was in DC and I was sitting next to a guy and he owns 9 schools. And he told me, I immigrated from here. I immigrated from Italy and I couldn't speak English. And my first thing that I could do was become a cosmetologist and get into a trade. And then I started to make money. And then I built a name for myself. And now he has 9 schools that teach, you know, over 1,000 students a year. And so it gives people the ability to do a trade with their hands with a quick path to earnings. And it's really, really powerful. possibilities. I mean, if you're following along with this whole, you know, fear around AI and all these layoffs in the technology sector, and, you know, just some of the stuff that's happening in the economy right now, 94% of these businesses are hiring. I mean, that's a huge level of job opportunity compared to mass layoffs that are happening in other sectors. 74% of these businesses actually started their own business, and 76% of these owners were graduates of a cosmetology school. And that's, you know, much more, you know, that's very relevant with some of the legislation that we're hearing in, you know, that's pertaining to schools, but that's really important. And then return on investment. There's on average a 4 to 6 year student loan payback period with significantly less student loan debt than traditional 4 year college degrees. My fiance is a physician. He's in his 13th year of training, making a lot less than Adam, and taking out a lot more. Fortunately, he had help from parents, but there's a lot of people that go into what we consider first choice careers. And I put that in parentheses because it's just, it's just not apples to apples. And then of course, kind of, you know, the less tangible element is passion, right? You know, this offers a career for someone who can make great money, albeit they have to work for it, right? It's not just going to come to you. And nobody should expect it to come to you because it can't in any industry. Get to do what you love, have a great quality of life, and get to physically touch and transform lives. And so, you know, I also like to highlight, well, you know, whatever happened to Adam in that story. And the reality is Adam got access to data and he got access to financial literacy and really recognized, hey, maybe this isn't my income as a problem. Maybe it's that I've never educated myself on money and that I haven't had any education around it, and that it's a lot of money out, and really looking at combining the two. And that gave him a light bulb moment and really recognized he had a pretty sweet gig where he was. And it empowered him economically to really be able to create change and recognize he was in a good place, but he did need to look at how he was managing his money, not necessarily what he was making.
Wow. I am so blown away. And I hope that our listeners also feel really empowered with this data, because if the government is able to see these reports as well, this definitely could change what's happening in the schools, what's happening for our industry mm-hmm. overall. And it's really unfortunate though that they're looking at unfair data.
Yeah.
And this is why it's so important of how we are classifying employees, how we're paying them mm-hmm. and our tips. And I'm so glad that you're using your voice to stand up for our industry in an area that could be very, it could hurt our industry if it goes in a different direction. So I thank you guys so much for running that report. That's incredible.
You're so welcome. And if I can say a couple other things about that, I think why it's so important to people like yourselves is we want to attract career employees into this industry, right? You want staff that wants to make great money, that yes. wants to really work and love their career and be able to make a financially prosperous career in their craft. And so the problem with numbers like that being published is, let's say I'm thinking about my career, I go online and I see, okay, the average earnings are $30,000 and $17 an hour. Okay, maybe I'm going to do something different, right? Then we just lose someone who could really add value to this industry. And so not only are we not attracting the type of talent that we want into this industry, we're also losing people like the Adams of the world, right? Or that think the only way for them to make it is to go solo. There is a way to make it, but there is some personal ownership in this as well. And so I think it also behooves owners like yourself to also make sure they're leveling up, like what you're doing. You're leveling up the way you treat employees, the opportunities that you have. You're making sure you continue to evolve and educate yourself. And it's really important for owners to do that as well, to be able to be role models for the type of employees that they also want to attract. So it's kind of it's a big ecosystem that all kind of depends on each other. And so one other plug is we're gearing up for phase 3 of the study, which will go deeper into that sector for salons with between 1 to 10 locations with employees. So if you fall under that, you can participate. And please do participate, because in order to have this study continue to have validity, we need more participation. It's completely anonymous, but we need that data. So please do participate if you see it. And then also we're adding chains to that. We have a lot of chains that have agreed to participate. So we'll continue to work hard on this data, but we do rely on businesses, if you're listening, to participate. So please do.
Amazing. And Erin, is there some link that we can put in the show notes? Okay. Yes. That would be perfect, because I know, you know, I want to use this podcast as a platform to help elevate the industry and shine light to the areas where those gaps are at and what we can do to really change this industry as a whole. Erin, thank you so much for your time today. And I know all of my listeners are going to be blown away by the wealth of knowledge and the information that you're sharing. And I really want to encourage all of our listeners to check out The Fill if you're a salon owner or in management of your company. I know for myself, it's going to be a game changer, because already just being involved with Money SBO has totally shifted my mindset of what I can do with my business with the right education and coaching. And so as an educator myself, I still am a student for life, and there's so much more that I can learn. And I'm so excited to be learning with you, Erin, and your dad and the rest of the crew at Qunity. Is there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners today about yourself or Qunity and how we can find more about you?
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. And I see that with you, Jen, and I wish everyone was like you, because you went back, you already applied it, you're so hungry. And, you know, it's such a reminder that, you know, mindset is also really important too. It is tough to be in business right now, and there's a lot of threats and challenges, but you can also change and you can be the power. And I've really seen you do that. And you're so open and curious. And I just love being around people like you. So very grateful for that. And I love how much you pour into your team too. That was very apparent when we talked. To follow along with us, you can go to qunityinc.com, QNITYINC. And if you're curious about the study, you can go to qunityinstitute.com. You can also get to that link directly from the Qunity Inc. website. But I'll also have Jen post a link to get involved in the study, as well as a link to The Fill, which there's a banner on the QunityInc.com website to register, but you could also go to fillbyqunity.com. So Jen will post this in the notes. And if you're curious to hear Jen on my podcast, you can search Money02, money with an O, not a zero, and you can hear her episode. I'm not sure when it'll be live based on when this is getting released, but you can learn more about Jen in a different way and her money story. So thank you, Jen.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Erin.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for tuning in to today's podcast. If you are loving these episodes, I would appreciate a review on your experience of how this podcast is helping you grow your business so that others just like yourself can learn, grow, and be a part of the podcast. I'd love to get connected with my listeners, so make sure to join me in the free Facebook group, where you'll find a community of like-minded beauty professionals that want to grow their business and careers. I'll share with you my top tips, Q&As, and when new podcasts are released. Thank you again for your love and support. It's an honor to be a part of your business building journey.